Tonight's my clip ain't con. Wheezy on the beat. Oh. High school, she was that girl that make me do the hula hoop around the gym. 2:30 to 4, Monday to Friday. It is The Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you. Going to the phone lines, our guest today, as he's kind enough to take time every week to hop onto the program, Brandon Warn. He covers the Twins for The Athletic. You can subscribe and find all of his content there at The Athletic. Brandon, as always, the time's appreciated. Tough out for the Twins on Tuesday night in the Bronx, especially after the promising top half of the first inning that they displayed. It was capped by a two-run shot off the bat of Eddie Rosario. Is he one, because you've, you know, watched him in person many times now throughout the last few seasons, is Eddie Rosario one of the coolest customers you've seen in person up close? Because he doesn't seem like he lets the moment or the spotlight get to him.
Yeah, I think he and Miguel Sano and Jorge Polanco are probably the three guys who are kind of at the high end of that list, and maybe Polanco ahead of Snow, even if you can believe it. But yeah, it seems like Rosario just revels in those big moments. And I don't know if he played high profile games as a youngster, whether it was with a traveling club or anything like that, or if he's just wired that way. But it's just a remarkable thing to see him just thrive on that stage. And you can tell he wants to play in a lot of those games in his career, and hopefully the Twins will be able to put together a club that will allow that to happen year in and year out moving forward.
We've referenced it in the past, but now that the season is the regular season, the games portion of it is a closed book, how promising is that core outfield in the future of it for the Twins with Rosario, Buxton, and Kepler going left to right?
Oh, I think very. I think you can argue that each of them is still going to get better, not only because of their age, but because of what their games look like at present. You can see a path for Rosario to just improve a little bit more with discipline. With Kepler, it's hitting left-handed pitching and maybe lifting the ball a little bit more. And with Buxton, it's just playing like he did after the first month or two. So, honestly, I think it's one of the more exciting Twins outfields in a long time, maybe even more so exciting than the old Jack Jones, Matt Lawton, Torrey Hunter bunch.
Byron Buxton, you mentioned him. He makes a great play in center field, slams into the wall on Tuesday night, leaves the game a couple innings later. He reached on what, if I remember correctly, was a fielder's choice, then stole second base. And when he popped up from second base, was kind of trying to work out some of the kinks in that back, and then he left the game with the injury. Do the Twins, I think it's just so tricky, but do they try and tell him to tame it back at all? It's a very dicey proposition, but they need Byron in that lineup every single day or whenever they can. And every time he makes the spectacular play, you tip your cap and we're in awe, and he makes the jaw-dropping plays in center field, but then you hold your breath as he's going 100 miles per hour into the wall as well.
Yeah, I wonder, and it kind of reminds me of Bryce Harper a little bit with the Nationals, where he was making, plays that are just absolutely crazy, or stretching doubles into triples and diving in head first and all that. And I'm not sure what the right answer is, because Harper has missed time in a couple seasons, including this year, for injuries. And, you don't want to take away what makes guys great, but at the same time, too, how great can a guy be if he loses 30, 40 games every year to injury? So I don't have a great answer for that. I'm guessing they probably won't until maybe the first really, really big injury, which is obviously something you don't want to think about. But at the same time, too, if you play afraid or if you play scared, you start pulling all your players late in the season and trying to keep anybody from getting hurt, that's not really a way to approach either baseball or life. So I think for now they'll probably just kind of leave him be. But I think in the back of their minds, they're probably like, man, maybe just dial it down just a touch.
And wouldn't you rather, if you were a coach in that spot or a manager in this case, Brandon, wouldn't you rather have the player that is always out there, laying it out, giving the 110%, or whatever cheesy cliche you want to use? I feel like you'd rather have that guy than the one who you have to try to motivate to get going, to kind of flip the switch and things of that nature.
Yes, although I will say this, situational awareness is important. There was a play late in the season, I want to say the Twins were losing by 5 or 6 runs, and there was a ground ball to first, and Maurer ran to the base and then kind of slid to it, and there was potential for a big collision between him and the runner. And I'm just thinking, if you're down 5, 6 runs, it really doesn't make sense to try hurt yourself on a play like that. And I understand the will to win and all that too, but it's in the moment, sometimes it's just not necessary. So with every situation, as long as players are aware of what's at stake, both with their bodies and in that particular game, I think more often than not, they'll be able to kind kind of justify the risk versus the reward and what it means to them.
Always enjoy his time on the program with us. He is Brandon Warren, covers the Twins for The Athletic. You're going to have to explain this one on Twitter. I was trying to pick my spot to jump in the other night, or it might have even been the day after the game. Those who were in favor, to lay out this scenario, 3-0, couple runners on base, top of the first inning, everyone can go back to that time when Byron Buxton was up to bat. It resulted in him striking out. There were those who, hindsight being 20-20 as it is, wanted him to bunt in that spot, and you were adamantly against it, correct?
I would say I was almost beside myself in my defense of him swinging away. So, yeah, I definitely did not want him to bunt.
Isn't it weird how we've had scenarios this year where Paul Molitor has called for a bunt, and those same fans that are outraged at that time now in turn, once they recognize, oh, Byron Buxton strikes out in this at-bat, go back and say, well, I wish he would have bunted. And they're the same ones who were lobbying against the bunts that Paul Molitor called for this season.
Well, it totally shows a lack of understanding that when you manage a game, it's like you want to use your players at certain scenarios like relievers and high leverage. Well, in the sixth inning, you don't know if that's going to be the highest leverage spot. You have to kind of go with the idea that you can certainly lose a game in the sixth if you can't win it. And back to the bunt for just a second, it was like, okay, the infield is in, so you're already, you know, the element of surprise is gone. A squeeze play, a right-handed pitcher sees that play unfolding in front of them. They can either pitch out or throw at your guy, hit him. It's ruled a dead ball, and then everybody has to go back to where they started. And you're not going to catch an infielder like Todd Frazier, a great fielding third baseman, 34 years old or whatever he is. Like, people are talking about him being nervous and missing the play. I'm like, okay, 95, 96% of these plays get made by the worst fielders. Keep in mind, again, too, Frazier, very good defensive third baseman. Like, just because things sometimes pan out doesn't mean it's a gamble that's worthwhile. Let the guy swing. I mean, it was just unconscionably dumb to me to say, yeah, you should have played for that fourth run, because they're using hindsight to say that Buxton struck out. And I'm going to say, well, use that same hindsight to see that the Twins lost by 4 runs and tell me how much that one run would have mattered.
Could I not make the case too, Brandon, that, and again, hindsight being 20-20, could I not lobby for the spot of, if Byron Buxton, and I'm glad they let him swing away there, if he deposits the ball into the outfield for a 2-RBI double, the Yankees then go down 5-0, and you really feel the life sucked out of them, because 3-0 after the top of the first with that offense, that bullpen, you still feel good about your chances, but 5-0 could have been a different beast. Had they bunted, Byron gets forced out at first, or maybe that run doesn't even get home on said bunt, then we're really scratching our head. I feel like let him swing away, and it was a chance that I thought the Twins could have delivered even a bigger body blow had it worked out in a sense where Buxton reaches on like a 2-RBI double.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody talks about what would have happened. Hey, maybe Buxton reaches. Yeah, but that's still only the fourth run. I mean, go for the gut punch, the gut punch, whatever you want to call it, and just, you know, a 5-run lead, as it feels so much more comfortable. Maybe Irvin Santana is going to locate a little bit better. I don't know. I don't think the pressure got to Irv, really, but he obviously was not very good. But you can't look at it in a vacuum after the fact and say, gee, that fourth run would have been nice, when, first of all, that fourth run's not guaranteed if you bunt anyway, because maybe they execute, throw the runner out or whatever. But again, yeah, you have to keep playing your game. You've scored 3 runs, have 2 runners in scoring position, and their pitcher has gotten 1 out. So you're through, what, 6 batters to that point and 1 out. Don't give the Yankees, a team with great pitching, any more outs than you have to. So there's just no way anyone, I think, is going to convince me that a bunt would have been the right idea.
Brandon Warren, our guest this afternoon here on AM 1450 KATE. I know I saw scrolling through the Twitter masses after the game, some had brought up, as expected, I don't blame Twins fans whatsoever for doing this, but some brought up afterwards that, you know, this one game scenario, well, now it kind of stinks because the Twins get just a little sniff of the postseason and they're out in the blink of an eye after one contest in the Bronx. If it, to me, Brandon, I think I referenced this to you last week. I said I thought it was a big advantage for the Twins that against the Yankees, it was just a one-game do-or-die, because if it was a best-of-5 or even a best-of-7 against the Yankees specifically, I think it could have been uglier with their rotation, their bullpen, and their lineup stacked up against the Twins.
Yeah, when you've got a team that has more horses than you in terms of personnel, those longer series can look worse. In a one-game thing, you're like, well, we tried, but now we're done. In a series, you know, you can really get blown out of the water quickly. And it would, you know, it would obviously make more obvious that the Twins don't have a deep bullpen, don't have a deep rotation, have an offense that can't hit lefties if CC Sabathia gets a start. You want to avoid all those things if possible. And so, you know, the other way you can avoid those scenarios is win your division. So none of those things applied to the Twins this year, and as a result, it was one and done. And you just got to kind of live with it and hope that next year things are better.
The hope would be, too, by this time, 3 days have passed, but if the fan base, certain ones amongst them, need more time, it's fine, I get it. But whenever they exhale, you have to look back on this season as a huge success, I would think, and a team that overachieved, if anything, and gave us all a heck of a ride to follow along with, correct?
Yeah, and a fun summer, and they made it Twin season for a long time until the Vikings showed up. Sometimes it's Viking season as soon as they get to Mankato, or I guess Egan moving forward, and they gave fans a reason to keep watching well into the fall. I think you got to tip your cap.
Brandon Warren with us this afternoon here on the Blitz. Does what they accomplished this year, does it automatically put elevated expectations already on next season?
Oh, I think so. I think because of how young the team is, and because they just looked better, I think, than 2013. I think 2013 just had a feel like it wasn't all that legit. 2015, excuse me. Whereas this team, you feel like they're on their ascent. They just need a little more pitching, and I think you can justify that they can hang with just about anybody.
Are you hoping to see the Twins? And I know I'm looking quite a ways ahead here. The postseason's just getting underway, but for the Twins, the games are done for this season. Are you hoping to see them spend some money? I don't know what the dollar amount. I don't want to put a total value on it, but are you hoping to see them spend some money in free agency, maybe loosen the wallets a little bit and get some pitching, both bullpen and perhaps within the rotation?
Maybe a little, but I think they're also going to be creative, whether it's trades or finding guys who are undervalued in free agency that they can prop up with a good defense, kind of like the Royals have been able to, or have at least tried to do with guys like Jason Vargas and Ian Kennedy. So the guy I would keep an eye on is like a Tyler Chatwood, who 3.49 ERA away from Coors this year and 6.01 at Coors. So he's a member of the Rockies, of course. But if you can find guys you can prop up with your defense, or there's something in their numbers that you think you can fix, that's the kind of thing I think they're going to go after to kind of support guys like Santana and Berríos.
You brought up that word support, and I think the offense has a lot of it. We mentioned Rosario and Buxton, Kepler, Polanco, Dozier, Maurer, all those guys set to be back. Miguel Sano, hopefully, as well. So the offense appears to be in a very, very good spot, and there's a lot of young talent. But as it goes with pitching, I think the Twins have been an organization in the past where they believe they can succeed from within, and while I'm all for that, also need some outside help, whether it is trades or just straight-up free agency, right?
Yeah, I think I might go after a guy like Lance Lynn if I'm going to try sign a guy to a big deal, just because he's second year after Tommy John. He's shown really great, you know, numbers and all that, and St. Louis is a good place to be stealing pitchers from. So Alex Cobb is another guy, but honestly, you know, I just don't know if I see it happening. I think Yu Darvish would look good, but I just don't think it's going to be a thing.
How critical is the offseason? I mentioned his name before. For Miguel Sano, he's expected to be one of the pillars of the franchise going forward. Certainly he was dealing with the injury at the tail end of the season. There were questions about his weight throughout and some of his dietary issues, perhaps, that may or may not exist. How critical will the offseason be for Sano?
Yeah, I think it's important. And I know as much as people want to laugh and joke about him being such a good player at his weight and how his weight hasn't mattered to this point, he's not going to be 24 forever. And so you do have to plan for the future. Poor dietary habits, you know, it's something that's not going to get better just overnight. And so, and it's not going to get better the older you get. So, you know, just like any of us having to learn how to take care of ourselves, I feel like maybe that's part of the deal for Miggy. And so I can't turn my nose up at the fact that, you know, maybe the Twins do want him to play at a little bit lower weight. And it didn't have anything to do with his injury. Did it have anything to do with his recovery? It's certainly possible. Does it have anything to do with the fact that they want him to play at a lighter weight? That is indisputable regardless of if he had gotten hurt or not. So I hope he takes it to heart. I hope it doesn't become a thing where it creates a rift in the organization. But he's a great dynamic player that they want to keep at third base for as long as possible, and I hope he does whatever it takes to make that you know, a thing that happens.
And I know that maybe him being in the lineup, not just in a pinch hit spot on Tuesday night, maybe in the DH role, perhaps it changes things. But certainly it's he's just a bigger threat when he is in the lineup, and it's another headache for the opposition to try to deal with. So it's hard to not look back even a little bit, Brandon, and say, man, what would that lineup would have looked like down the stretch run and even in that wild card game against the Yankees if they would have had Sano?
Absolutely. I mean, he probably would have been one of the hitters up at the top when five of the first six reached. So, yeah, you almost can pretty easily dream about what might have happened and what that would have meant for the offense. And I almost wondered if it would have made sense to have him on the bench as a decoy, as, hey, this is a bullet that we can, you know, fire if we need, or if we want to put him in the on-deck circle to start the wheels turning a little bit as far as the opposing bullpen. But apparently they thought better of it. Again, for me, a 24 versus 25-man roster for one game in an elimination game probably isn't that big of a deal, so I might have still done it anyway. But I understand where they were coming from, but, you know, I thought it would have made some sense. So they got to get him healthy one way or the other, and it's too bad that it came down to him not being able to help them when they really needed him.
Last note on the game from Tuesday night, then we'll finish up with some other notes to get to. And far be it for me, I'm not questioning Paul Molitor or any of the managerial decisions. I could never be in that role. I know I wouldn't succeed within it. But one of the things that just bugged the heck out of me on Tuesday night, Brandon, is Jason Castro just looked completely overmatched in his first two at-bats, struck out in both of them, and he comes up, I don't know if it was the sixth or seventh inning, maybe the eighth, I don't know, but his third at-bat, he comes up, and me as a consumer, as a spectator of the game, as he approached the plate, I thought, I don't think he has a chance. I don't think he has a chance in heck here. And then you recognize that on the roster, they carried three catchers, Castro, Jimenez, and Garver. And we know Chris Jimenez, one of his strengths offensively is hitting the fastball, and the Yankees bullpen loves to throw him. My question is, were you surprised at all that they didn't opt to go with some other option? And Jason, not that it would have changed the outcome of the game, but I'm watching Jason Castro's final at-bat thinking he doesn't have a chance.
Right, and not only that, but Kenny Vargas, too, as you're on the bench, you know, break glass if necessary, get you a long ball quick or strike out. And honestly, if you're in a dire spot, you take that risk. So, yeah, it's strange just because, you know, on any given day, a guy can have a great game or a bad game. But if you can see a guy's really not going great, you maybe try to get him out of there a little bit quicker than you would otherwise, especially when you have that kind of depth. So, yeah, it is a little troublesome or a little worrisome to me because they're going to want Castro to start probably 110, 115 games next year. And offensively, he doesn't give you a ton. Obviously, the bar to a catcher for league average production is not that high, and he's pretty much right there. But you don't want these games where it's non-competitive at bats like that. And so what I'm going to be interested in there is if Garver makes the team next year, how often he starts and kind of steals some playing time if he can hit anywhere close to what he did this year with the Red Wings. So, yeah, I thought maybe late in the game it made sense to go get, even if you're not going to do a catcher-for-catcher swap, get a bat in there and just see if maybe they can give you a different look.
We'll finish up with a few points. It sounds like, I don't know who was first to break it, but I did see Lavelle Neal posted something on the Star Tribune yesterday. Sounds like Paul Molitor will have at least an offer to return as the Twins manager. I think it would have been a hard one to persuade the fan base that it was the right choice if they didn't bring back Molitor. Now, obviously, Thad Levine, Derek Falvey, they've got their priorities in order, and I can't imagine that priority number one is keep fan base happy at the top of their chart, but it's certainly on that list somewhere. I think it would have been hard to persuade the fan base had they let Paul Molitor go without at least offering him something.
Yeah, and I feel like there's the offer, and there's also, I think, a dynamic where they maybe could have had him be reassigned into one of those ambassador roles like with Troy Hawkins, Torrey Hunter, Michael Kadire, where they say, look, we'll give you the fancy salary and we'll give you all that, but we'll let you, you know, stay in Minneapolis. You don't have to travel. You can show up whenever you want. You can do some broadcasting. You can do some instruction. And, you know, he's got young kids that you could, you know, if you want to, you could justify getting to spend more time with them as well. So I think that would have been the only way to really spin it where fans would not have been really upset about the fact that a strong offer was not made. Now, with that said, you know, if let's say the Phillies, who have Terry Ryan and Andy McPhail, wanted to go get him and gave him a big offer. Again, that might be an easier sell, but ultimately I think fans are going to say, look, he got him to the playoffs, got to bring him back.
I think Paul Molitor, too, and this is somewhat of an outsider perspective, but I think he's a good manager, and better yet, for all accounts, he seems like a good dude that the players trust and sort of vibe with. What are your first-hand accounts and interactions that you've had with Paul Molitor?
when he used to go in the clubhouse when Gardy was managing, the Hispanic players would flock to him. And so I don't know how that dynamic was forged. I know that he worked with a lot of them when they were young. But I also know even, you know, the guys like Brian Dozier, they all speak in glowing terms. And so even if you don't necessarily like some of the on-field stuff, whether it's bullpen management, bunting, or whatever, an element of keeping the clubhouse in harmony, being able to have tough discussions with players that get them to where they need to be or can kind of massage their, not necessarily their egos, but their mental states, like Jorge Polanco going through that rough stretch or patch in the middle of the season, all of that is important. And so, well, I maybe don't like all the bunts or whatever, I still think, by and large, he's a pretty good manager. And, you know, if they wanted to go get their guy, I think they would still do that. But at this point, I think they're like, you know what, Molitor, we're going to give him another look. We'll give him a two-year deal with the idea that, hey, if something happens in a year, you can always do the Guardian, pay him 1 year to stay away.
We'll wrap things up on this. Of course, the two American League Division Series are underway, so I wanted to look at the National League, and we'll start with Dodgers Diamondbacks. I'm going to put you on the spot for a prediction. LA against Arizona, who do you like, and what or who makes the difference in that series?
I think I'm going to go with the Diamondbacks. I want to take the underdog this time. I think that they're going to be the team to watch because they were, I think, like 11-8 against the Dodgers this year too, and they just seem to have their number. And I don't know, the Dodgers, they just don't strike me as a team of destiny. I think the Diamondbacks are going to trip them up.
And then we'll leave on this one, same one, Cubs Nationals. Obviously, the dark cloud that is looming is the health of Max Scherzer. Sounds like if he starts a game, it would be Game 3, which more than likely would make him unavailable to start a Game 4 or a Game 5. Who do you like, Cubs, Nationals, and what or who makes the difference there?
All right, give me the Nationals on that one. I just like the pitching staff better. Honestly, John Lester has not been John Lester. Jake Arrieta, all the same. Kyle Hendricks, nothing terribly special. He's starting Game 1 against Steven Strasburg. Bryce Harper's back. Daniel Murphy's back. All these guys are healthy. Give me the Nationals, and hopefully Brandon Kinsler, hashtag Mom Spaghetti, can get a ring before he comes back to Minnesota in the offseason.
Hey, there we go. There's a prediction. I'd love to have him back in Minnesota. Folks, find his work through The Athletic. Brandon, as always, the time's appreciated.
You got it. Thank you.
We'll go through Friday's spread. We'll get you some over-unders, some spread picks for the Big Ten football games coming up next.